overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Should they score?
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We can put the Crosby score.
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make you bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posts it in. It's a rocket of a shot.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those live on tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, the man on my far left, Sean Assor. Man in the middle, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Remember, hashtag Bell Let's Talk. That's what we're all about today. Amanda Stein of our sister station in Montreal is going to join us in the second hour. She's going to share her story, her struggle regarding mental health and Bell Let's Talk. Always a tremendous cause. Brian Hedger of The Athletic in Chicago also covers the Blackhawks for NHL.com. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Get you set for the Jets and the Hawks tomorrow evening back in Chicago. And at the top of next hour, Aaron Portsline is going to join us to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, the Blue Jackets with a rare loss last night.
Yeah, well, the loss has been coming more often since their record winning streak came to an end. Probably no surprise. You know, it's not, you're not going to win 16 out of 17 games throughout the entirety of the season, but a little bit of struggles in Columbus. We'll talk to Aaron about what it's been like since the winning streak ended. Facebook, if you want to find us on Facebook, we're at facebook.com/illegalcurve on our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news. And there's a fair bit of Winnipeg Jets news for a day where the team traveled to Chicago, didn't skate, didn't meet with the media. Get up to date on illegalcurve.com. But of course, we start tonight by looking back at both last night's game against the San Jose Sharks, last night's loss against the San Jose Sharks, and Monday night's loss against the Anaheim Ducks. And gents, here we are on the 25th of January, and you had two good games for the Jets in a row. They took care of the Arizona Coyotes, that was last Wednesday, handily took care of the Arizona Coyotes, followed that up by beating a divisional rival in the St. Louis Blues, a team that's been struggling, but took care of them also well on Saturday. So you've won two in a row. Then you got this Monday, Tuesday, back-to-back at home against the Anaheim Ducks and then the San Jose Sharks. And the possibility, you've got 4 points in the bank, and really after these last two games, to only still have 4 points in the bank, to not earn at least 1 point over the last two games, has to be terribly disappointing for the Winnipeg Jets. It probably almost sums up their entire season. Close, but not close enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. I mean, we said it last week. You know, we thought that the Jets had to win three of these four home games for it to be a successful homestand, a mini four-game homestand here. I guess not so mini, but when the games come back-to-back, you know, it didn't seem as long as it really was. But, I mean, these two games against Anaheim and San Jose, I really thought that the Jets could have not only got a point in each of these games, I really thought they could have won either of these games, whether that was in regulation or in overtime. And you look at last night's game, I mean, the talk here in Winnipeg has been all about that penalty shot.
Yeah.
And Carey Fraser was on the Don Vito roundtable, and he said, I mean, it shouldn't have been a penalty shot. It was a bad call. The ref made the wrong call there. But the fact is, I mean, the Jets were right in that game, and I thought the effort level in both of the games against the California teams was very good. And the Anaheim game was obviously the more physical game, but, I mean, the Jets were in the lead. They looked like they were in control of that game. And, you know, the San Jose Sharks had played the previous night, and they didn't look very good. I mean, the Sharks looked sluggish. But as far as the effort level goes and you know, the offensive production goes, didn't have a problem with that at all. And they obviously got the boost, Drew, from Patrick Laine yesterday, and he picked up an assist, even though, you know, he wasn't one of the better offensive players on the ice. Brian Little definitely deserved his star yesterday with the two goals.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, I mean, the effort is not going to get you higher in the standings, right?
You know, it goes to show you, and I think it tells you, so, you know, that game, the game last night against San Jose, I mean, the Monday game against Anaheim, they played well. I don't think anybody would complain about their effort. It was a coin flip of a game. You know, fine. That Monday game, yeah, you lost. You would have loved to get at least 1 point, take it to overtime. You lost 3-2. You got close. Last night's game against San Jose, you have a San Jose Sharks team that really doesn't need that game last night. They don't need to win that game because they are comfortably in a playoff spot in the Pacific Division. They got into town late on Monday night, or Tuesday morning, rather, you know, 2 a.m., flying in from Colorado. They have every excuse in the book, and they don't need to be the desperate team there. The Jets needed to play desperate hockey against the Sharks.
Well, I don't necessarily know that they didn't play desperate, because I thought that they were pretty solid throughout the game, Drew. And I know what your point is. I mean, again, the Melker Carlson penalty shot goal, to me, wasn't the goal that bothered me. It was the goal that was scored 5-on-3 after the Jets already had a guy in the penalty box. Then they get that too many men on the ice penalty. That was the goal that killed me.
That was the first goal of the game, though.
Yes, and that was the goal that I thought really, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, that wasn't the TSN turning point. It was the penalty shot goal. But, I mean, that was a situation where the Jets couldn't afford. That was just basically giving San Jose a goal. Well, it was like, here you go. Here's a free goal.
But, yeah, but you look at last night's game, and the way and people are apoplectic about the call, the penalty call, and Sean will get you in here.
Yeah.
Please, Drew, you're talking way too much.
How it was a terrible call, and it wasn't a great call. And it was a bad call, you could go as far as to say. But good teams, when they're on the power play, don't even put themselves in the position for the referee to blow that call. You don't give up. In that situation, at that point in time in the game, when you're up 3-2, it's a game you desperately need. It's a game that your opponent doesn't need nearly that much and has every reason to sort of wilt and to fade away if you're able to get a 4-2 goal, or to even have almost nothing happen on the power play. For the Jets to somehow give up a shorthanded breakaway, for Trouba to make a good defensive play that unfortunately was called incorrectly by the official, the problem is that the Jets put the ref in that position to begin with, and not so much, and that they weren't able to take advantage of a weakened opponent.
Well, not only that, but you look at both Monday and Tuesday, you look at the power plays, 0-for-7,
yep,
and -2. They gave up shorthanded goals both days. The Jets were only down a goal with 12 minutes to play. Pardon me, no, they were tied with 12 minutes to play, and they had two power plays yesterday, and they still lost 4-3. So when your power play is hurting you, you're digging yourself into a world of hurt. And say what you will about the penalty shot, and can we just say that penalty shot, not the greatest of efforts by Melker Carlson, just kind of flicked it in there. Yeah. He gave a little bit of a blade fake, but just when you put yourself in these situations where it's so hard to dig yourself out of, I think you just mentally, it just compounds, and you find yourself in a real bad place mentally as a team, and that just starts to build, and before you know it, you're hanging your head on the bench, and it's just, I hope they can rally around this mentally, to be honest.
Yeah, and I realize, you know, Jets fans are pretty down after these two losses here, guys, but I mean, the Jets could have easily won those games.
Yeah, but good teams find a way to win those games, okay. And that's why San Jose won last night and the Jets didn't win, is because the Jets are not a good team.
No, well, if you want to simplify it to that, Drew, but I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, they almost get a goal with 17 seconds left. I mean, again, but that's the way hockey is. I mean, sometimes you get the luck, sometimes you get the bounces, and I realize people want a more complex reason for why the Jets are struggling, but I mean, like, the Jets could have won these two games. And sure, I agree, Drew. Nobody's going to argue that the good teams aren't the teams that find a way to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been like that for forever, right? In any sport.
You're right. Good teams find ways to win when they don't have 100% of their effort.
Right. And like, to me, the goaltending was not the issue in the last two games. I mean, Andrei Pavlik, a lot of people are getting on him because he was out of position. But to me, it was the defensive zone coverage that led to that goal by Patrick Marleau.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm not going to blame this loss on Andrei Pavlik. I wouldn't be surprised if Andrei Pavlik plays tomorrow night against Chicago. I think he's actually been pretty good. I don't think he's been excellent.
He's been Andrei Pavlik.
With the exception of the St. Louis game.
I mean,
the St. Louis game.
He had a great second period against St. Louis.
He stole that game. I mean, St. Louis had a lot of good chance. What did they have? 25 shots in the second period? So that game, he stole that game, I think.
Andrei Pavlik has been exactly what you expect from Andrei Pavlik. He makes some nice saves.
Right.
He's out of position on some instances. Sometimes he gives up a terrible goal, and sometimes he's able to make 25 saves in a second period and keep your team in it.
Well,
he's been Andrei Pavlik. Andrei Pavlik is, what, 31 years old now?
29.
29, pardon me. 29 years old now? he's not going to change. He is what he is as an NHL goaltender. And Devan Dubniks don't come around very often. He's the exception to the rule.
And, Drew, even though the Jets have come really close and they could have easily won, you know, three games or got points in all four of these games on this homestand, right, it's the same issues that plague this team. It's the special teams. It's the lack of discipline. And, you know, you saw the Sharks open up the game on the 5-on-3, and I realized there were, you know, five other goals after that. But, I mean, to me, that was just gifting San Jose a goal. I mean, when you have guys like Brent Burns, who's got 21 goals, and, you know, Joe Thornton, one of the best setup guys in the league, you give those guys a 5-on-3, they're going to score half of the time, right? So, I mean, even though they were really close, it's the same issues that plague the team. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that they couldn't finish this homestand better. But if they play like that and they put that effort out there on a nightly basis like they did against Anaheim and San Jose, if they miss the playoffs, I think the fans are going to be happy that they're at least giving that effort level on a nightly basis.
You know, and Sean, I'll, you know, you come in here in a second. Effort is good, Ezzy. I agree. Effort is good. At some point in time, effort is loser talk when results don't back it up.
But the thing is, though, Drew, you look at the way the Jets played, you know, a month ago in Boston. You look at the way they played a couple of weeks ago against Montreal. The effort wasn't there.
Sure.
So I'm just saying, at the very least, if you're not getting those points, at least you're putting it all out there. As Brian Little said it, you know, they played their tails off and they left it on the ice. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, the NHL is very competitive. San Jose and Anaheim are two of the best teams in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. So they lost to a couple of teams. I wouldn't be surprised if you know, the Sharks are in the Stanley Cup Finals again.
Look, they lost to good teams. No argument about that. But my problem is that, less so Monday night, but last night, that game was there for the taking. It was in their hands with a 3-2 lead on the power play late in the third period, and they somehow managed to lose the game.
Just speaking about special teams, I think the Jets should just watch Brent Burns and what he does on the power play, and they should mimic something along those lines with either Patrick Laine or someone else with the bomb of a shot. You saw the rotation with Couture and Burns, pardon me, on the opening goal where kind of Logan Couture is on the left wall. He just kind of gets it, surveys the ice for a bit, and then it's almost automatic. You see Brett Burns kind of rotate towards him. They just casually switch spots on the point, and without even, like, there was no doubt in my mind that Logan Couture knew exactly where that puck was going. He was just waiting for Brett Burns to station himself above that top of that faceoff circle, and it was just hammer time, and that shot was something else to watch. Brett Burns is incredible to watch on the ice. He is a phenom.
Well, look who scored for San Jose last night. You know, this is on a night where they really didn't have what I would describe as their A effort.
Well, Drew, they got into town at 2:30 in the morning.
That's what I'm saying.
The previous night.
They had every excuse in the books to not win that game. And you look at who scored for them, and you look at who their best players were, and it was Brent Burns. He was noticeable out there. Obviously, Logan Couture was noticeable out there. Patrick Marleau. It's their best players sort of fought through the adversity of the late night the night before and getting into Winnipeg early in the morning and everything else. Their best players decided this game is there for the taking. We might as well take it. We were okay if the Jets wanted to impose their will on us, but they didn't. They've given us the opportunity to breathe. So we might as well take a big breath and steal 2 points.
Also, shout out to David Schlemko for saving a goal with about 6 minutes left on the goal line there after Joel Armia tried stuffing it in on the side. Mm-hmm. It kind of slides out. David Schlemko right there to pretty much save the equalizing goal.
It's a better team. I mean, the Sharks and Ducks are better teams than the Jets. It doesn't mean that the Jets can't beat these teams, but I mean, They gave everything they had. I really believe that. I have no problem with the way they played. Mm-hmm. I think they did play desperate. But
I'll tell you why.
At this point, effort isn't good enough,
Effort's
Drew, because
not good enough.
You're 51 games into the season and you're behind the eight ball for a playoff spot, so you need wins.
And we're going to talk about the Western Conference playoff race coming up in a couple segments because it's there. That playoff spot is there for
exactly.
the taking.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of teams.
I don't know what the hell's going on with the Flames right now.
Well, you have a bunch of teams that none of them seem the least bit interested in getting that playoff spot in the West, and the Jets have as much talent, if not more, than all of those teams. It's like watching a race of a bunch of three-legged dogs in the West right now. Let's go to break. We'll talk about more about the Western Conference playoff race in a couple segments. But up next, we talk about tomorrow night in Chicago between the Jets and the Blackhawks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Picked up by the Jets, that'll do it tonight. Winnipeg has won their second straight and their fifth in a row in their own division and have defeated the Chicago Blackhawks three straight times this year by a final score of 3-1 here tonight.
The Jets look for four in a row tomorrow night as they visit the Windy City. They were there just about a month ago, right after Christmas, I believe December 27th to be exact. And they were able to defeat the Blackhawks 3-1. They look to build on that performance as they head back to Chicago tomorrow night. Game, of course, here on TSN 1290. Is it a 7:30 or a 7 p.m. start? I haven't looked at the schedule
7:30.
Yet. 7:30. Okay, 7:30 tomorrow night here on TSN 1290 and, of course, also on TSN 3.
By the way, Drew, that Jets-Hawks game on December 27th, I actually watched that game in Ixtapa, Mexico.
Nobody cares.
On the big screen.
Nobody cares.
I care.
Well, I mean, like, what was the relevant? And I watched it at my in-laws in Frankfort, Kentucky, on my surface. Does anybody care any more about that?
And I also did some tequila shots with some locals.
Yeah, well, again. Anyways, this segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
By the way, the good tequila's in Mexico.
Oh, boy. Are you going to tell us more about tequila?
It's the good stuff.
It's the good stuff.
The Jose Cuervo stuff that we have here is nothing like they have there.
And this isn't breaking news to anybody whatsoever. I think you're just discovering this, but I think most people would be like, yes, that is true.
Well, I don't know if you've been to Mexico and you've had the tequila.
I have been to Mexico.
Cabo Wabo. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anyways is right.
They drink it there like juice.
The Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow night in Chicago. You know, it's bizarre, this Winnipeg Jets team, and it's probably what's most frustrating about them, is that this, for some reason, they have the Chicago Blackhawks number. The fact that if you had told me at the beginning of the year the Jets are going to be out of a playoff spot right now, but they're going to be looking for their fourth consecutive victory in this, over the Chicago Blackhawks this season, you'd probably say, no, it's either going to be one or the other. They're either going to be a playoff team, and they're going to take that next step, and they're going to be able to take on the beasts of the Western Conference, or they're going to be the lesser weight, and they're going to lose to the teams like the Blackhawks. Yet somehow they're managing to split that hair by both being a lesser team in the West, but beating up on the Chicago Blackhawks. Explain it for me.
Yeah, and you know what stat is pretty mind-boggling, Drew, is that 20% of all of the Hawks' losses this year are against the Jets.
Yeah.
Just think about that for a second. It's ridiculous. I mean, going back 2 years ago when Michael Hutchinson...
What's more ridiculous is you had to actually pull out a calculator to figure that out.
No, I didn't.
I'm looking at it in your hand right now.
I was calculating what my tip was going to be when I ordered food after the show.
Oh, okay. Is that what you're doing there?
Yeah, it's going to be 20%
of... 20%.
20%
yeah.
of $25 when cool. I pick up that pizza.
Yeah.
No, but I mean... The Chicago Blackhawks, I mean, they haven't missed a beat from the way they were playing in the regular season last year. The playoffs were obviously a huge disappointment with them going out in the first round, but we know that this team can score goals. They've struggled defensively, and that's something that has been really the cornerstone of this team going back to their first Stanley Cup championship back in 2010, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Jets just match up really well against the Chicago Blackhawks. And is there something to be said for the fact that they're Central Division rivals and they play five times a year? Well, maybe. But I also think the Jets typically match up better against skilled teams. And I think the Jets have trouble against the heavy teams. And that's something that's really existed for a while. And you know, when you look at how the Jets have moved away from, you know, maybe that more physical team 2 years ago that had Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian and Andrew Ladd, they've moved away from that and are now a skilled team. And, you know, you obviously still have guys like Buff and Lowry and Thorburn, you know, who can mix it up a little bit. But, I mean, the Blackhawks, you know, we've talked to Mark Lazarus about this before, Drew, about a month and a half ago. I mean, he was basically saying when the Chicago Blackhawks were leading the Central Division, which now they're a couple points behind the Wild for the Central Division lead.
And Wild still have three games in hand on them. That
right.
shows you how good the Wild have been playing.
And Mark Lazarus was basically saying that that they have been Jekyll and Hyde, similar to the Winnipeg Jets, and they were first in the West at that point. So, I mean, have we seen the best out of Patrick Kane? Well, last year he had a career year, but certainly guys like Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa are having excellent season. Artemi Panarin has followed up his Calder Trophy season from last year with another great start to this season, or I guess it's halfway through the season, but you know, he's been very good. So, you know, this team really is, I think, still trying to find the right mix on defense. I mean, we know they still have Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jalmerson, and they brought in Brian Campbell. But that defense, I don't think, is as good as it was a couple of years ago.
A lot of miles on that defense.
Well, the special teams have been an issue for Chicago, especially the PK. So, I mean, yes, going into this game on paper, you'd say, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks will have the edge, but right now, I think the Jets are in the head of the Blackhawks. They've beat them three times. You know, over the years, the Jets have been very good against the Hawks, and I think they are a little bit intimidated by this Jets team.
It's a pretty bold statement to say that the Chicago Blackhawks are intimidated by anybody, never mind a team that's currently out of the playoffs.
Three wins in three games.
Well, I mean, I hear where you're coming from. You do look back, and the Jets have had success against them, and the Blackhawks probably have to be sitting back, to your point, and saying, you know, what is it about this Jets team that, you know, why are they a bugaboo for us?
By the way, that game, sorry, Drew, to cut you off, that game on December 27th, I mean, the Jets made the Hawks look like a very average team.
How would you know? You were three bottles of tequila deep at that point in time.
I got into the tequila after the game.
Sure, it was celebratory tequila.
Yeah, I was drinking Dos Equis. So I was just having a couple beers during the game, but
I was paying attention.
So anyway, Sean, you know, to Ezzie's point, do you think that there's anything to be said for the Hawks being quote-unquote intimidated, or maybe not intimidated, but, you know, having, whatever reason, having the Jets being a roadblock for them?
I don't know if intimidated is the word I would use, but there's definitely a seed of doubt, I think, that's been planted in the Blackhawks' mind. Usually this team is probably used to walking into any building against any team and saying, we don't care who's in front of us, we are going to win this game, and there's nothing they can do to stop us. And when you look at your record up against a team and you're 0-3 and you can't figure out what this team is doing, or if you're looking at the film or whatnot, or the stats, and they beat us in these categories and this, it starts to weigh on you, and then you start to second guess yourself. And I think that's just what's happening here. I think it's just a team that can't really figure out why a team that's significantly below them in the standings is giving them such a hard time. And I think that just leads to a lot of second guessing and a lot of maybe straying away from what you know, and like you said, I think bugaboo is a great term to describe it. Just throws them like a wrench in the gears kind of thing.
Yeah,
and Drew, I didn't mean that
they were literally intimidated.
No, it's not like, you know, if
they're going to cower in fear at the big bad Jets coming in,
right?
Like the Broad Street Bullies making an appearance or something.
It's more so mental. Yeah. And I mean, I just think if you look at, you know, the makeup of the Jets, and we know the Jets are one of the fastest teams in the league, especially when they're healthy. Mm-hmm. And we know that, you know, they've had some good battles with the Chicago Blackhawks over the years. But, you know, to me, I mean, we know Scott Darling is going to start tomorrow night versus the Jets. And we'll talk to Brian Hedger about that coming up next. Corey Crawford, you know, I still think he's a top goalie, but, you know, he has struggled as of late. And I realize that there are goaltenders across the league that are struggling. But, you know, the Blackhawks right now with their defense, it's a year where they're in transition a little bit, bringing a guy like Brian Campbell back. And, you know, a guy like Trevor Van Riemsdyk missed a lot of hockey last year. So I still think this Hawks team, even though they're second in the Central Division, you know, I still think they're finding their legs a little bit here. So, I mean,
which tells you all you really need to know about just how good they typically are, in that you're right, that they're not a well-oiled machine at this point, 50 games into the season, but they're not a well-oiled machine that currently sits with 30 wins in those 50 games and are comfortably second in the Central Division, really aren't going to finish, they're not going to finish worse than second in the Central Division. And they can still climb, depending on what happens with Minnesota, they can still easily climb back into the top spot.
Right, and you know, the good news for the Blackhawks has been they've been relatively healthy, right? And they haven't missed certainly as many man games as the Jets have, Drew.
Mm-hmm. 203 now, I believe, is the number that the Jets have missed in terms of man games this season.
Right, and that number's only going to go up. I mean, Tyler Myers isn't expected back, certainly not tonight, and we don't know when. Marco Dano's out for another month. We don't know about Matthew Perreault and Toby Enstrom.
Yeah. Matthew Perreault's placed on IR earlier today, and then Brian Strait was called up from the Manitoba Moose.
Drew Stafford
also. I'd be surprised, and this is just utter speculation, so take that for what it's worth. I'd be surprised if Toby Enstrom was in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree.
The way he fell into the boards hard in the first period, came back for the second period, didn't look himself, wasn't feeling well, I believe is what Paul Maurice said after the game. I think you can read between the lines to know what he's probably dealing with at that point. So you have Julian Melchiori, who probably steps into the lineup. I mean, you're not going to put – I'd be surprised. I mean, Melchiori's been up in the press box, so I would not expect that they would skip over Melchiori for Brian Strait, who by all accounts has not been very good for the Moose this year.
No.
That's Mike McIntyre.
Right, and Julian Melchiori's already had a game with the Jets this year.
Right.
More than a game, I think three or four.
You're talking about the Winnipeg Jets with, you know, a defensive core that features Julian Melchiori, Paul Postma, and Mark Stewart going up against Artemi Panarin, Patrick Kane, not getting you the matchups you want. This is going to be a significant gut check for the Jets, particularly on their back end, given those injuries. But it was only 2 years ago that the Jets had all those injuries on their back end, and that's what they were able to persevere and fight through those and propelled them into the playoffs. So, I mean, the Jets don't have... They can't use excuses as much as the excuse is there for them, because tomorrow will be game 52. The playoff spot is still sitting there for them. Hard to believe, but it is. And, you know, the other opponents aren't going to take any sympathy for your injuries.
And I think there's something to be said for going into that All-Star break feeling good. I don't think you want to go into that All-Star break having lost your last three games. Mm-hmm. And I realize that the Jets need more than just one win. They probably need, again, to go on a 4 or 5 game winning streak to really feel good about themselves and think that they're climbing the standings, Drew. But, I mean, certainly they have to play desperate hockey tomorrow night.
You absolutely do. The game time is 7:30 tomorrow night, available here on TSN 1290. Brian Hedger covers the Chicago Blackhawks for both The Athletic and NHL.com. He joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290.
Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. This segment of NHL This Week is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch tomorrow night's Jets-Blackhawks game, Bernstein's Deli has it on their five big HD TVs.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by Brian Hedger. Brian covers the Chicago Blackhawks for The Athletic and NHL.com. Brian, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good to be back. Be with you.
I appreciate your time, Brian. Obviously, talk about the Jets and the Blackhawks as they renew acquaintances tomorrow evening at the United Center. And, you know, Brian, we were talking about it last segment that it's sort of bizarre. This is a Jets team that has struggled throughout the course of the season, out of a playoff spot, below 500. And then you look at the Blackhawks, a team that is clearly in a playoff spot, second in the Central Division, only have 15 losses on the season. You know, yep, of those 15 losses, three of them are to the Jets. The Jets have won all three meetings so far this season. You know, what is it about the Jets, maybe, from your perspective, that cause a bit of a bugaboo for the Blackhawks?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. I think the Jets have a lot of size throughout their lineup, but they don't just have size. Their guys who have size can skate. I mean, they can really move. And one common thing that I've noticed this season with the Blackhawks is that, you know, when they go up against teams that can really get up and down the ice and really skate well, they have problems keeping up with them, especially on the back end, you know, maintaining a good gap and that kind of thing. I mean, they're susceptible to rush plays as well. And I think what teams, especially like the Jets, seem to do to the Blackhawks is they use that size and speed by maybe clogging up the neutral zone a little bit with the size, forcing turnovers, and then forcing the puck back at the Blackhawks and, you know, continuing to put pressure on Chicago's net. And when you're doing that, you're preventing the Blackhawks from getting set up in your own zone and doing what they do best, which is skill plays when you got guys like Panarin and Kane on the ice. And they basically just make life kind of like a living hell for the Blackhawks. I think it's a bad matchup. I don't know why that necessarily doesn't carry over to other games for the Jets. That's kind of a head-scratcher for me. You know, when I see them play the Blackhawks, I always seem to come away from the game thinking, like, why aren't these guys better? Mm-hmm. Like, they should be a better team because, you know, they certainly have the Blackhawks number.
Brian, you reported earlier today that Scott Darling's going to start in net tomorrow night against the Jets. Corey Crawford started last night against the Tampa Bay Lightning, a game in which the Blackhawks lost. Three of the last five games, Corey Crawford has let in four or more goals. Is there something to be concerned about, or is he just having a tough stretch here?
Well, I mean, I think in the short term, yes, there is maybe a little bit to be concerned about. But, you know, big picture, I wouldn't be very concerned if I were a Blackhawks fan or even the coaches. I mean, Corey has gone through these stretches throughout his career where, you know, he goes through stretches where he's just, you know, almost impossible to get a puck through. And then, there's ebbs and flows to a season. And I think this is one of those times where, you know, he's kind of fighting it a little bit, and I think he's trying to, usually with him, when he starts struggling, it's a thing about tracking the puck, you know, and he's not tracking it quite like he was at the beginning of the season. And, you know, you look back in December, he had that appendectomy on December 3rd in Philadelphia. He missed 10 games, and then he's played about 11 games, I think it's 11 or 12 games since returning. And just hasn't really gotten back in top form. Like, he's not bad necessarily, but he's not quite up to snuff to where he was at the beginning of the season. And this is a team, if you look at a lot of the puck possession numbers and different things throughout the season, you know, being outshot. I mean, this team this season is going through a lot of things in the way that they play the game that is different than what we're used to seeing from the Blackhawks. They've stolen, I'm just going to tell you, they have stolen, flat out stolen a lot of games this year by having, you know, key timely goals in games that they're getting outplayed, but the goaltending has been so awesome that the game, you know, in the third period is like 0-0 or 1-1, and then the Hawks find a way to get a timely goal and then they win. That has happened time and time and time again this year, and every time it has happened, also at The Athletic is Scott Powers. He's their main Hawks beat writer. And Scott and I will talk. We have a podcast after every game. I can't tell you how many times we've talked about the fact that the Hawks probably should have lost the game, but they win. And the only reason they won is because Corey Crawford was so awesome, right? Well, I mean, I've said all along, I don't think that a goalie can be that good for 82 games or however many that they end up playing, 50 games or whatever. There's going to be ups and downs. And when he has a slight slip, if that play overall of the Blackhawks doesn't improve, then goals are going to start going in. And I think that's what we're seeing right now with the Hawks is that, you know, Corey's not quite at that top, top, top level that he was at before. He wasn't going to have a .980 save percentage during 5-on-5 all season long. So that's dipped. And, you know, the play is about the same as far as in the neutral zone and everything else. And that's what we're seeing, I think. I think we're seeing, you know, his play, you know, kind of dropped off a little bit. Goals are going in, and, you know, they're trying to fix that.
Brian, just looking at line rushes today, you reported Marian Hossa skating with Kruger and Desjardins, what appears to be on like the fourth line. I'm curious, what have you seen out of the veteran this year that maybe has warranted him playing below in the lineup where he's usually used to?
Well, I don't necessarily think that what happened today was a reflection of him necessarily too much. He's had a great season overall. He's rebounded really well. You know, he did struggle last season putting the puck in the net, and he changed the curve of his stick a little bit this year. He's lifting the puck a little bit more, and it's going in for him. But I think what has happened recently is he was up there. They had put him up there playing with Taves for a while, and Taves has been struggling this year as well, and it wasn't clicking. And so I think that they ended up – one thing that worked for him last year in the playoffs against the Blues was when they moved him and Andrew Ladd – I'm sure you're familiar with him – When he came back over, they moved both those guys down during the series against the Blues. I think like halfway through the series, they moved him from the first line with Taves to the third line with Kruger. And they made that like their main checking line that went against Vladimir Tarasenko's line. And they basically just in essence told him, hey, do whatever you have to do to shut down Tarasenko. And they did that. And I think what happened was it kind of simplified everything for Hossa. And so he started focusing on just kind of shutdown role, you know, with Tarasenko. And wouldn't you know, when they did that, they had the puck more, and he started scoring again, kind of like Hossa. That was last year. So Joel Quenneville always knows, he refers back to that kind of thing. And he know he, in his mind, you know, Kruger with Hossa tends to work for whatever reason. So I think I don't think it's going to necessarily be the fourth line. Like they may when they go through line rushes tomorrow morning at the morning skate, that might be the fourth line. You never know, but they're going to use that line like it's the third line because they're going to get more ice time most likely than Tanner Caro and Vinny Hinostroza and those kind of guys, simply because Joel trusts Marcus Kruger defensively. Maybe more so than definitely more than any other forward on in his lineup. So he gets a lot of those defensive zone starts, gets a lot of time. And, so that's in essence going to be the third line probably, even though they might skate as a fourth. It's kind of confusing, but that's the way it works. That's the way it rolls.
Brian Hedger, our guest on NHL This Week. Brian covers the Chicago Blackhawks for theathletic.com in Chicago. Also, you can see his work at NHL.com. Brian, you know, we're about 5 weeks away. I think it's 5 weeks today to be exact from the NHL trade deadline. And Stan Bowman has never been shy about making a move at the deadline. We know last year, of course, Andrew Ladd was the big acquisition. In previous years, it's been Antoine Vermette. You know, what would Stan Bowman be in the market for come March the 1st? Is it to shore up the back end where you have four guys in Keith and Chalmerson and Campbell and Seabrook who you know what they are and they're all very solid, but they have solid and then some in some cases, but they have a lot of mileage on them. Is he looking to shore up that back end, maybe get a fifth, sixth, seventh defenseman in that region, or is there someone up front that he's looking to acquire, you think?
Well, when we first started looking at what they might want to acquire at the deadline, the biggest sore thumb that stuck out was at left wing on the top line with Taves, and that was at that time that was to play with Taves and Hossa. It's basically the spot where Brandon Todd played, mm-hmm. and when they won the Cup in 15, and then they traded him for Anisimov, which is good, but it's kind of apples and oranges. You get a second line center and Anisimov, but you give up your top line left wing, who's a young kid, it's a two-way force, who's going to score 30 goals every season. It's not easy to replace that. And so they spent a long time, the bulk of the last two seasons, this season and last, trying to find somebody to play in that role. That's why they went out and got Andrew Ladd from the Winnipeg Jets last year, was to try and fill that role. That one still stands out to me as the biggest sore thumb, but I will say, and I think they will be in the market trying to find a more veteran presence, who is comfortable at left wing, who may be a good complement for Jonathan Taves, and whoever they decide to put on the right wing, probably going to be a Hossa eventually. I think that's a big need, they need to go out and they need to address that. That said, the last couple weeks, you're starting to hear more about them potentially being out there looking for a veteran defenseman as well. I mean, Scott Powers, he's heard that from some of his sources already. And I think that's something that they did not anticipate necessarily going into this season. I think that they were hoping that, especially in the left point, so I think they were hoping that guys like Gustav Forsling would work out. He was a rookie. He didn't really work out. He's in Rockford right now, still developing, still has some rough, raw areas. Then it was Michael Kempney, a guy that, and he's still in the lineup, but he's really been, you know, he's inconsistent. He'll have games and stretches and games where he's really good, and then he'll have games and stretches of games where he's really not good. Like, he looks like a rookie, a first-year player. And all that kind of inconsistency will tend to lead, like Joel Quenneville will just leave him on the bench, and then you're playing with five defensemen, basically, in effect. I think they are going to look for – and Brian Campbell, you know, he came in, and I think he's been good overall, but, you know, let's face it, he's been a healthy scratch like three or four times. When he came into the season, he had like an Iron Man streak of I don't even know how many games it was. It was a lot of games, like five, I want to say around 500, 600 games in a row that he had played. And, you know, that ended under Joel Quenneville because, you know, Joel didn't think the play was, you know, at a level that he wanted to put him in there. So you have all these factors. Three new defensemen this year as compared to last year, Forsling, Kempney, Campbell, and none of them have really stepped up and become like this solidifying force that they were hoping and looking for. And at the same time, you got Brent Seabrook, who's kind of in a little bit of a slump right now as well. So when you throw all that in the mix, there's some issues on the defensive side. So it would not surprise me to see if they go out there and try and address, you know, that issue with a veteran defenseman at the deadline.
Brian, you just mentioned some of the rookie defensemen that are playing for the Blackhawks this year or have played for the Blackhawks this year. I wanted to ask you about one of the Blackhawks rookie forwards, Ryan Hartman. He's been a top prospect in the Blackhawks system for a while. He was a first rounder back in 2013. He's had some time up on the top line there. How would you assess his first 50 or so games with the Blackhawks this year?
Well, you know what? Like all rookies, there's been some ups and downs, some inconsistencies, that type of thing. But I think of all the rookies that they had this year, and they started the season with six first-year players on the roster, which is a gigantic number for them especially. But among all those guys, he has really stood out the most to me as right now, right here. Now, he is an NHL player. You know, there's no doubt in my mind he is an NHL player. There's no question he doesn't need to go back to the AHL anymore. He spent a couple seasons in the AHL. He has developed down there. He's an NHL player. Now the thing that they need to define is what kind of NHL player is he? I mean, he's been billed as like the next Andrew Shaw. But honestly, I think that there are parts to his game that are maybe even better than Shaw. And then there's other parts that Shaw, you know, obviously does better, going to the net, that kind of thing. You know, taking the abuse and punishment in front of the net. Not that Hartman won't do that or doesn't do that, but, you know, that's Shaw's bread and butter. But you know what? Ryan Hartman's a tick bigger. He's a little bit bigger, not a ton, but he's a little bit bigger than Shaw. And he's got a great shot and playmaking ability. I think that he's a keeper, but here's the interesting thing with him. Right now, as it stands, when you start looking at that expansion draft after the season, he's going to have to be exposed. They're not going to be able to protect him. Because they have a bunch of guys that like must be protected because they have no movement clauses, and he's been in the league too long. He's definitely meets all the requirements, so he's going to have to be exposed as of right now unless they can somehow, you know, work out some deal where they can open a slot up, like a protected slot, to protect him. So to me, that's one of the areas I'm really going to be looking for in the off season. Because I don't think they can lose this guy. Like, they have spent a lot of time developing him, trying to get him to be an NHL player, and here he is, and he's here now, and he's helping out. You can't afford to lose this guy. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Ryan Hartman, but I think he's the best of the bunch right now among their rookies.
Brian Hedger covers the Chicago Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com and NHL.com. Brian, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening to talk about the Blackhawks.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Brian. We'll do it again soon. When we come back, we look at the Western Conference playoff race and discuss which team wants that final spot. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290.
Big thanks to Brian Hedger for joining us to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, in case you missed any of that interview or any of the show. It'll be available on tsn.ca. It'll also be available on our website, illegalcurve.com. And to make it simple, just subscribe to the show on iTunes. You'll get it sent to you each and every week. Still to come on the program, Aaron Portsline at the top of the hour and Amanda Stein at the bottom of the next hour as part of Bell Let's Talk Day. She's going to open up and talk to us about her struggle with mental health. So we're looking forward to that. Amanda, obviously a colleague of ours that's TSN 690 in Montreal and brave enough to join us, and you know, we're honored that she'll be joining us to tell us her story. Gentlemen, you look at the Western Conference playoff race, and we're sort of used to the Western Conference being the juggernaut conference, and it's always been the bigger of the two conferences, and the Eastern Conference was the lesser of the two conferences as of late, over the last, let's say, five seasons. Well, this season, the race for the final spot in the Western Conference is an absolute abysmal one. Currently, it's being held down by the Calgary Flames, a team that was utterly destroyed by the Montreal Canadiens last night.
Coach called them pathetic.
I don't know, Al, if you have that audio available, but if not, we can get it up momentarily. Their coach, Glenn Gullitson, Manitoba, called the Flames' effort pathetic. This is a playoff team, and they are a playoff team that is three games under 500 when it comes to their winning percentage.
Yeah, for now they're a playoff team.
Right behind them is the Los Angeles Kings, a team that has won 23 of their 48 games. They're under 500 of a winning percentage. Vancouver Canucks, Dallas Stars. The Dallas Stars are right in the thick of things despite having won 19 of 49 games. They're only 3 points behind the Flames with two games in hand. And then the Jets, who we talked about, of course, you know, had they won last night, a game that was certainly there for the taking, had they won last night, they would have been 1 point behind the Calgary Flames for the final Western Conference playoff spot, having played the same number of games as the Calgary Flames. This Western Conference playoff race is not much of a race at all.
Well, I mean, depends the way you look at it. It's a great race in the sense that you have six teams right now competing for those two spots, Drew. But, I mean, it's obvious the Western Conference is top-heavy. I mean, the teams like Chicago, Minnesota, Anaheim, San Jose, Nashville, Edmonton, I mean, they're starting to separate themselves from the rest of the pack, right, Drew? Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. I mean, we talked about it on Saturday's show. We picked, you know, who we thought was the Stanley Cup favorite at this point in the season. I picked Pittsburgh and Dave picked Washington. But certainly I think with the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup last year, Sean, I mean, I think the balance of power might have even shifted last year. So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, Calgary, as you mentioned, holding on to that last wild card spot. If you look at, Drew, the St. Louis Blues and Calgary Flames, who are in 7th and 8th in the West right now, and then the other four teams that are chasing them right now, Arizona and Colorado are a lost cause, so we won't throw them in there. But if you look at those six teams, every single one of those teams, with the exception of Vancouver, has a losing record in their last 10 games.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Calgary's lost four in a row. St. Louis has only won four of their last 10. The Jets have only won three of their last 10. They've lost two in a row. Dallas has only won three of the last 10. I mean, the big surprise for me, guys, and I've been saying this for about 2 months now, I picked the Dallas Stars to win the Cup this year. So, I mean, they're making me look pretty bad right now. But the fact that the Dallas Stars haven't turned this around yet, and the fact that, you know, you haven't seen a big trade from Jim Neal, whether that's for a goaltender, you know, a defenseman, whatever, something to shake this team up. I mean, I didn't expect much out of Vancouver this year, so I'm surprised, quite frankly, that they're still in the playoff race in late January.
And they're playing the best hockey of all the teams you just mentioned. Like you said, they're 5-2-3 in their last 10. Everybody else hasn't even mustered up a grand total of 5 wins. It's not really, you know, it's not really saying. It's not a Herculean task you're asking from these teams, and none of them can do it.
Right, Drew, and you have the Calgary Flames and the Jets, who have played 3 more games than LA and Vancouver, but between 7th in the West and 12th in the West, you have a separation of 5 points. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, right now, you look at those teams, and, I mean, pick whoever you want. I mean, I don't think anybody can really, with certainty, know who's going to end up in the playoffs right now. It's completely wide open. Are these teams good? No, I would say, with the exception, I mean, I think St. Louis is still a very good team. L.A. obviously is going to get a boost from Jonathan Quick coming back. But the rest of these teams right now are very mediocre, including the Jets.
Yeah, I think it's wide open. I think if you could pinpoint a team that might catch fire, you know, as we make our way through the season, you can maybe solidify them into that final wildcard spot. But it's impossible to determine that because of how inconsistent all these teams are playing. Some teams, you know, take Vancouver, for instance. They started pretty decent, and then I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's terrible.
It's going to be some sort of penance you're going to have to pay for saying
I'll put a dollar in the fine jar.
Pretty decent? I mean...
pretty decent. You guys cut me off.
Okay. Sean is lit right now.
Nobody cut you off. You dropped decent on the audience on your own.
I'm so sorry. Dallas has been good, and or okay, and I just no team is playing well enough to grab that playoff spot. So if one team can catch fire, I think it's there, and it doesn't matter if it's the Jets or Vancouver. Or that's what I was talking about, Vancouver, before I embarrassed myself totally on here.
Well, Sean, and I agree with you, and I think the reason why it's tough to see any of these teams necessarily, you know, standing out from the rest, with the exception of St. Louis, is that almost all of these teams have been out of the playoff spot for the majority of the season. Sure. So that includes the Jets, the Stars, the Canucks, the Kings were holding down a playoff spot for a big chunk of the season, but the Calgary Flames have kind of been in and out. They had that 5 or 6 game winning streak earlier in the season. I believe that was early to mid-December. So, I mean, right now, you're talking about a Western Conference at the bottom that just isn't very good.
If you're looking at it from an odds perspective, you know, sometimes people like to garner, see what's happening over at Sports Club Stats.
Yep.
The Los Angeles Kings have a 73.8% chance of winning that final playoff
spot. And they've played the fewest games.
They've played the fewest games of all the teams that we've been discussing. So right now the Kings, according to the people at Sports Club Stats, are in the driver's seat there to win that or to earn that final Western Conference playoff spot.
Drew, I just
don't... The St. Louis Blues also, who are just... only 2 points ahead of the Flames, also are expected to be in the playoffs come the end of the season.
And obviously the Blues, you know, had that very disappointing loss against the Jets. I don't see the Blues missing the playoffs.
Well, the Blues bounced back last night.
The Blues just don't miss the playoffs.
They shut out the Penguins last night. So, you know, if you're shutting out the Pittsburgh Penguins, odds are you've maybe come through the lull and are beginning to trend back upwards. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I don't expect the Blues to miss the playoffs either. This has to be what's most frustrating for Jets fans. Is that you look at your competition and you look at the teams around you, and it's not like this is 3 years ago where it was 99 points is what it took the Jets to make the playoffs the 1 year that they did. You're going to make the playoffs in the West this year by getting to 90 points.
Yep.
You know, it shouldn't be a very difficult number of points to achieve.
Well, in contrast, Drew, it's probably going to take 95, 96, 97 points to get in the East.
Yeah, well, it's a lot harder to get it in the East. And then you look at, you know, what the Jets are trying to do. It's not like they're trying to, you know, 90 points is not a high number that you should have to get to.
Well, two years ago, it took 99.
That's right. That's my point, is that the Jets, who the playoff spot is sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jets fans have to be saying, look at the roster we're putting out there. Look at the offensive firepower we're putting out there on a nightly basis. You know, some of the best scorers in the entire NHL. What do they have? Four players in the top 30 in points in the NHL? And that they are sitting there behind the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, they've scored more goals than any team in this wild card race.
But the problem is they've also given up more goals than all the other teams.
And that's the thing. They just can't keep it out of their net. And that's where they're digging themselves a grave.
So, Drew, are we going to have to start saying the Beast of the East?
Well, I mean, there certainly isn't going to be. You might have to, because when Pittsburgh and Washington face each other in the division finals, as opposed to the conference finals or the Stanley Cup finals, it's going to be a travesty for all those who really want to see the best teams playing at the end of the season.
And I still think there are some good teams, but again, I mean, you're talking probably two or three elite teams. I'd put Chicago, I'd put San Jose in there, maybe Anaheim,
and I think
you'd put Minnesota in there.
And I don't trust
as opposed to maybe six or seven elite teams in the East.
Right, there's four. Yeah, I would say, and Edmonton, you know, for how well they've been playing, I don't think anybody expects that they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender this year. In any event, it's something we will, of course, monitor as the season progresses and as we get closer to the trade deadline 5 weeks from today. Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, he joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290.
This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or visit their new showroom at 982 Portage Avenue.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Aaron Portsline. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. It's been 10 games now, Aaron, since the Blue Jackets' incredible winning streak came to an end. It was just over 3 weeks ago on January the 5th against the Washington Capitals. 5-5 in their last 10. You know, are the Blue Jackets sort of playing in a manner that you would have expected after going on that incredible streak? I mean, it's not realistic to expect them to go on another 16-game streak right afterwards. So over the last 10, would you say that it's sort of what you would have expected, or are there maybe any signs of concern?
Well, I think if it shades one way or the other, I think at this point it shades a little bit more toward the concern. I think of they've played 11 games if you count the Washington game, 5-6. I think they feel like they've played well in maybe two or three of them, right? They've escaped a few games because of Bob. Korpisalo had a really good game in there. Had a wild, kind of a coin flip game in Ottawa over the weekend. They have lost their way. I don't think it's a surprise to have a lull, to lag a bit, but their style, and I broke it, I sort of wrote an analytical piece for tomorrow about it where, you know, their motivation early in the season was nobody respects you. Nobody respects you. The league doesn't. Opposing teams don't. The media sure doesn't. Nobody thinks the Columbus Blue Jackets are worth a damn. And then they peel off 16 in a row, and that now there needs to be a whole new motivation. And I think they're looking for that now. The obvious one is pride. That one should be there for always. But I think they're kind of in a spot right now where they're trying to rediscover the magic. And they've not looked good here for quite a long stretch, actually, 3 weeks now.
Aaron, we have to ask you about Cam Atkinson. He's got 24 goals and 46 points in 47 games. Does Atkinson deserve to go to the All-Star game?
Oh, for sure he does. Yeah, he does. If you're asking me in the current format, if you should take somebody, you know, as long as the league says somebody from every team has to go, then I think it's hard to get him on there. And, you know, we should be honest here. Columbus has benefited from that. Every team has to have somebody many years, including last year when Brandon Saad went. But yeah, I mean, his numbers, absolutely he deserves to go. Given the way that it's set up, I think it's a tough criteria for any team, especially a team in the East, to have three players on the roster. Because if you're picking 11 guys from an entire division, then only three teams can have two. And if one team has three, wow, that says something. And the Blue Jackets are in a division with Pittsburgh, Washington, the Rangers. I mean, some teams with some star power. There's a spot now with Malkin injured and not playing. I don't know where it's going to go. I think they could pick Atkinson. He certainly should be in the discussion. But Nicklas Backstrom's out there too. And the Blue Jackets currently have three representatives, Jones, Bobrovsky and Tortorella. I don't see the league giving Columbus four representatives to that game and Washington only two. So maybe Backstrom gets the first pick here if he wants to go or not. But yeah, Cam Atkinson has absolutely played at an all-star caliber.
Yeah, Phil Kessel's had a pretty good season too.
Sure. Put Voracek in the mix there as well. Maybe Giroux.
Yeah. Aaron, you mentioned Jonas Korpisalo. I'm curious, Do the Blue Jackets have faith in this guy that he can be the backup to Sergei Bobrovsky, or is there a need to address a backup situation in Columbus?
Well, if they didn't have faith in Korpisalo and or Forsberg, but I think the organization seems to have more confidence in Korpisalo, they would not have put Curtis McElhinney on waivers. Now, it's high time for Korpisalo to reward that confidence. I thought he really struggled in Ottawa. He has been good in earlier starts. He's allowed bad goals in earlier starts. They've probably got three or four, maybe five starts for, probably three or four for Korpisalo or Forsberg, if should they come back up and give him another look before the trade deadline, before I think they'll have to confront that very real possibility. They may have to go outside the organization. Korpisalo played really well here last year when there wasn't much at stake. He fell apart at the end of the Calder Cup playoffs last year after a really strong start. And then Forsberg took over, kind of muddied the position. Who is the backup? They never expected McElhinney to last a half year with the job, but now they've got a pretty short window where they've got to figure out if Korpisalo, who's currently with the club, he's going to get the first crack. But if he or Forsberg are up to the job, if not, it's absolutely something they may need to look at.
Aaron Portsline, our guest on NHL This Week. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, you know, we're sitting here on the 25th of January, and, I mean, with, you know, barring something, you know, tremendously unforeseen, the Blue Jackets are clearly and comfortably in a playoff spot in the Metropolitan. It almost seems like the, you know, the four teams in the Metropolitan are going to be Washington, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and the Rangers. That's almost for sure at this point. And then, you know, the Flyers are battling there to try and get that second wild card spot. So what? How does John Tortorella keep this team motivated from now through the end of the season? You got 35 games left. How does he keep them motivated? How does he keep them sharp for the next 35 games?
Well, I think that's what he is so flummoxed by right now. Like, he was left with, he doesn't end up speechless very often. He usually has a lot to say. He was without words after last night's game in New York. He was... Excuse me, he's just stunned by the way they played in Ottawa. They couldn't check anybody. I mean, he's just sort of, I wouldn't say he's at a crossroads in his career here, but he's at a crossroads here, I think, in the season, because he has been pushing this, and he's been, I don't know, maybe not pushing, but he's played along with the narrative that there is a new and improved John Tortorella on display in Columbus this year. Much more patient, much more understanding, much more forgiving of mistakes. Almost John Tesh, I could call him John Tesharella, the way he's talked some days about his approach to the players. It was easy when they were winning 16 in a row and they were cruising along. I think he's a little troubled now. How do I get these guys motivated? And I think people tend to rely on their default settings, their same old tricks when it reaches that point. I don't know if the morning skates get thrown back in. I don't know if he starts practicing them harder. I don't know if he changes things in the second half. This team needs an all-star break right now. He's going to be coaching in it. He's going to get away from his team. I think this is a really well-timed break for them. And then they pick it up on the other side. But it's a real, I think, interesting story to follow here is what kind of coaching does Tortorella do in the second half, and does the same new and improved John Tortorella as has been so often told the story this season? Does that continue?
Aaron, we're about 5 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot more as the weeks go on here, but you look at the Columbus Blue Jackets, they've got four solid scoring lines, a very solid D group with rookie Zach Werenski, Seth Jones having a great season, Ryan Murray also playing very well. You've got a good group of six defensemen there. The goaltending has been very good this year. Do you think Jarmo Kekäläinen is going to be active at the trade deadline? And if so, what area do you think presents a bit of a weakness here for this Blue Jackets team heading in, you know, to the stretch drive in the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, a week ago I would have said that a checking line centerman, a veteran face-off winning type centerman, Lucas Sedlak has really taken a big step in that direction. I'm not sure that's on the wish list this point, although a team that's this young could certainly use veterans. There's no bad spot for those type of guys if they're available and cheap. The goaltending we talked about earlier, I think that's an obvious choice if Korpisalo doesn't string a couple of solid starts together and make these guys believe in them. The play around the backup goaltenders has crumbled because they just don't trust that a save is going to be made. So I think I put that at the top of the list now. I also wonder. I think they've had a good look at Dalton Prout and Scott Harrington here with with Savard and Nudavara injured, that's kind of a silver lining. I think those two have been better than maybe people expected them to play. Certainly together they've played pretty well. So I think it's goaltending. I think a veteran leader type player is certainly something that Jarmo would look at because the team is so young. But I think at this date you'd have to say that a trustworthy goaltender to back up Bobrovsky and maybe even push Bobrovsky for playing time down the stretches is at the top of the list.
Aaron, what have you seen out of the maturation of Alexander Wennberg? I'm just looking at his stats right now. He's matched his career high. I assume he'll get one more point to surpass that. He's got 40 points in 47 games this year. You know, how have you seen him mature in his third year in the league?
Yeah. Isn't it funny that everyone kept saying that the next step for him was to shoot more? And he's shooting less. He's shooting even less this year than he did last year. Barely won a game. But he's really, really taking a step forward. He's a much more engaged player. He's much more physically involved. Now, he doesn't blow people off the puck, and he's not, you know, a physical sort, but he's up and in on the puck now. He's a bigger guy than people maybe expect. He's really filled out here these last couple of years. The playmaking has always been there. I think he's just bursting with confidence this year, and that line's been really good. Now, Brandon Saad has really hit a rut here with his production. But Wennberg, between Foligno and Saad, has been really, really good for them. And he's also done a lot of damage on the power play. That's where he's made a lot of his hay. But he's a sublime playmaker, absolutely.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, Aaron, take care of that cough, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was hoping to hide. I need a cough button on this.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll touch on Bob McKenzie's mid-season survey, let's say, of the NHL's coaches and what they came to say about the game so far. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Amanda Stein of TSN 690 joins us at the bottom of the hour as part of Bell Let's Talk Day, talk about her struggle with depression and generalized anxiety disorder. Really happy that Amanda, honored that Amanda is going to share her story with us. Bob McKenzie, he did his mid-season coaches poll. He does it each and every year. I should mention before we get to that this segment's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. As I was mentioning, Bob McKenzie went out and he polled the coaches of the NHL. 25 out of 30 coaches responded to him. I don't know what the other five coaches were too busy doing.
Yeah,
but
what is it? Sorry.
I don't know. It's like, you know, we're not asking for state secrets here. We're asking for an opinion. It's an anonymous survey. Nobody's coming back at you and going to be mad at you. But anyways, 25 out of the 30 coaches responded to Bob's midseason survey. And the question on the Stanley Cup champion and who they thought was going to be the Stanley Cup champion was certainly slanted heavily in favor of the Eastern Conference. 18 of the 25 coaches thought that the Stanley Cup champion is going to either be the Washington Capitals, they got 10 votes, or the Pittsburgh Penguins, they got 8 votes. The other two teams that were selected were the Minnesota Wild with 3 votes and the Chicago Blackhawks with 2 votes.
How many of those coaches, by the way, are picking their own team?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they are. If they are, then they're probably a little delusional, but, you know, it seems like it's clear that both Washington and Pittsburgh, I think what they're saying is whoever wins the Metropolitan Division, whoever comes out of the Metropolitan Division in the playoffs, that's the favorite to win the Stanley Cup at season's end.
Well, Drew, Bob should have asked Illegal Curve because on Saturday's show, I picked Pittsburgh, and Dave Manuk picked Washington. So yeah. Illegal Curve has the answers, too, here as well.
The more surprising result for me came out of when the coaches were asked who they think is going to win the Western Conference.
Right.
And 11 out of the 25 coaches selected the Minnesota Wild as the winner of the Western Conference. They were head and shoulders above everyone else. The Blackhawks and the Sharks each got 4 votes. The Ducks got 3 votes, and the Predators got 1. Look, I know that the Wild are having a tremendous season, and all the kudos in the world go to the Minnesota Wild. But at season's end, if they're the Western Conference representative, I'm going to be surprised. And well, I think that speaks more about maybe their history and maybe about Bruce Boudreau's coaching history than it does anything else.
Well, and just how tight it is in the West. We talked about how tight it is at the bottom, Drew. But you look at, you know, the difference between first place and fourth place. The Minnesota Wild have 67 points, and the Anaheim Ducks have 63 points, and the Minnesota Wild have games in hand. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Chicago is going to win the Western Conference. But when you look at the playoffs, I mean, typically – where you seed doesn't really have much of an impact. I mean, look at what the Pittsburgh Penguins did last year, and Pittsburgh has certainly carried it over. But the Western Conference is wide open, and it's maybe more competitive at the top when you consider that these are just better teams, right? Because Calgary, Vancouver, LA, throw the Jets in there, Dallas, all of these teams just aren't very good teams right now.
Right.
And we'll see how the next 30 or so games play out. But there certainly isn't a consensus like there is in the East when you have Washington coming off of that 120-point season. But certainly I think this is great for hockey. I mean, let's be honest here. You've seen teams like Toronto and Buffalo and other teams struggle a lot over the years. Columbus is one of those teams. You know, just talking to Aaron Portsline. I mean, I think it's good for some of these teams in the East, some of these fans who have struggled through some pretty lean years,
sure,
for these teams to now be, you know, the more elite teams in the league.
The cream of the crop, as it were. I mean, do you trust the Minnesota Wild, Sean?
Not really, to be honest. I would also be surprised if at the end of the day it's...
That means they're going to have to beat the Chicago Blackhawks in a 7-game series.
They're going to have to beat a team that has been in that situation before and that has probably won in that situation before. And experience is so crucial in the postseason.
And that's why they went out and got Eric Staal.
I mean, Eric Staal's got experience. I mean, the Wild have playoff experience. They've been a playoff team for the last...
Hey, you got to give Eric Staal credit. I mean,
he's having a great year.
He had some bad years in Carolina.
I'm just saying...
My point is, Drew, that it's win now for them.
I know, but when I match up the Minnesota Wild, if I look at the Minnesota Wild...
Oh, no, I'm taking Chicago.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking Minnesota to win the Stanley Cup here. But I'm just saying, I mean, they went out and they acquired Eric Staal. We know how many millions of dollars they have tied up in Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. I mean, this team isn't, you know, just happy to be in the playoffs.
No, that's why I'm so surprised at these coaches who theoretically watch the game, but maybe they're not even watching their opponents that closely. Maybe they're not watching other teams as much. But that 11 of the 11 team
that's
coaches
a surprising number
would take the Minnesota Wild, which means that they're going to have to beat the the Chicago Blackhawks in the 7-game series, or they're going to have to beat the San Jose Sharks in the 7-game series. Kudos to the Wild, but I don't see it happening, you know, in April and in May and in June when it really counts. I'd be surprised if they were the Western Conference representative. And I'm surprised at the number of coaches who think that they are, you know, as good as their record currently is.
Well, like you said, I mean, right now the Wild are sitting in first in the West with 67 points, and they've played less games than the Sharks and the Hawks and the Anaheim Ducks. But again, once the playoffs start, Drew, you mentioned the matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And the matchup has, I mean, we see upsets every year in the first round. So, I mean, who expected the Florida Panthers necessarily to get out in the first round? They look pretty good heading into the playoffs, winning the division, right? So,
sure.
I mean, it happens every year. And so you look at, you know, the Minnesota Wild right now. Is it based on where they are, top of the Western Conference? I think so. I still think that, you know, there are better teams. And by the way, we haven't seen the Minnesota Wild ever get over that hump and get to the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. San Jose did it last year. And I still think, you know, Chicago and San Jose, for me, are the two best teams in the West. But, I mean, I wouldn't read too much in it.
I thought the Anaheim Ducks were pretty damn good as well on Monday night.
They're a good team.
Yeah, they look like a playoff team.
Well, they certainly are a playoff team, but they look like
a team that builds
a well-oiled machine.
Well, that's a team that's won the Cup, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, I think there is a lot to be said about experience. I mean, let's be honest, guys. We know that when it gets down to the playoffs, usually if you get a hot goaltender, that helps a lot. And then it gets into matchups and, you know, who coaching, I think, you know, in a seven-game series is also very important.
Yeah.
That's why I think Joel Quenneville, you know, gets a lot of credit, you know, for the job he's done with the Hawks winning the three cups in the last 7 years. So, I mean, right now, you know, good on the Wild, Drew. I didn't have them making the playoffs. So, as we know, my picks are horrible.
Let me ask you this. If you were sitting down and you were talking to a friend and you said to them, who's been the best defenseman this year?
Brent Burns. And my preseason pick for the Norris.
And if your friend said anybody other than Brent Burns, would you probably look at them a little bit cross-eyed?
No. Ryan Suter's been excellent. I mean, let's be honest here, guys. Ryan Suter, Zach Parise, you know, Jason Pominville, throw Eric Staal in there. I mean, these guys are not spring chickens. I mean, this is a team that should be considered a favorite. I mean, they're up there as far as having one of the highest payrolls in the league. A lot of that is tied up in Suter and Parise from that contract back in 2012. But, I mean, this is a good team, and it was a disappointing year for them last year. They've had many disappointing, you know, first-round exits. So, I mean, Devan Dubnyk is a top goalie in the league. I mean, this team should feel like they can go all the way.
When the 25 coaches were asked who the best defenseman is, 19 of them said Brent Burns.
Yep.
No surprise. He won handily. Three of them said Shea Weber. He's been good for Montreal.
Yep.
One said Erik Karlsson. Good. Ottawa's a playoff
His
team.
Offensive numbers are down.
Yeah. But he's, you know, he's playing well for Ottawa. One said Ryan Suter, as you just mentioned, you know, on the
surprised there wasn't
the
more than
Western
one
Conference.
For Suter.
One for Suter. And I want to know who this guy was. One for Victor Hedman, which sort of leaves me scratching my head a little bit.
I mean, Tampa Bay is at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, and Hedman, I mean, Hedman's still an excellent defenseman.
Yeah, but
don't get me wrong.
Think he's been the best defenseman this season?
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I still think Drew Doughty's the best defenseman in the league. So, I mean, Shea Weber is still looking for his first Norris.
But this year, Brent Burns has been the best defenseman in the league.
Yes, and
far.
Part of that has to do with the fact he's got 51 points right now.
Well,
right?
You know what? If you don't have to defend all the time because you're putting the puck in the opponent's net, that's not a problem.
And you know, I picked him, and I'm a bigger Burns fan than anybody. And, you know, there are many good defense. I mean, I still think Duncan Keith is a top defenseman, but I think Shea Weber is still going to get some votes. I mean, he's been awesome for Montreal.
Yeah. One other one, but quickly, because we won't have time to get it all. You can find it all on TSN.ca. Coaches were asked, you know, what bugs them the most in the league. And the runaway answer, apparently, was the schedule. 8 of the 24 respondents ticked that box as the one that ticks them off the most.
Big shocker.
Yeah. Everyone complains about the schedule, and the coaches themselves, apparently, in Bob's midseason survey, certainly echoed that in their responses.
My question for you guys is, why have we heard more complaints about the schedule in the first year of there being a bye week?
Because it's not like they lengthened the season at all. They just compacted it into fewer dates.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, it was a choice of the players, and the players
miscalculated.
Didn't the World Cup also?
The World Cup also affected it.
Yeah.
The World Cup and the bye week, which the players won as a concession for 3-on-3 in the All-Star.
So you know what, Drew? Get rid of the bye week then.
Get rid of the bye week. Get rid of the 3-on-3 All-Star game.
I mean, it's an 82-game schedule. I mean, if you have a bye week, you're going to have a compressed schedule, right?
Yeah, well, it's 80. You know, it used to be 82 games being able to be played in 140 days. Now it's 82 games being played in 135 days or 130 days. So no wonder it's a compressed schedule. Anyways, Amanda Stein is part of Bell Let's Talk. She's with our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. She joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Catch HNL every weekday at 3 on TSN 1290.
Great song.
Alongside Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. As you undoubtedly know, today is Bell Let's Talk Day. To join the conversation, use that hashtag and the stigma surrounding mental health issues. It's a great initiative, and we're proud to be a part of it, and our next guest is going to speak to it. So let's go to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Amanda Stein. Amanda, you know her best as the reporter for TSN 690 in Montreal, frequently on this show on Illegal Curve. She's on with Rick all the time. She joins us today as part of the Bell Let's Talk segment to talk about her battle with depression and an anxiety disorder called generalized anxiety disorder, GAD. Amanda, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
thanks so much for having me. I always enjoy being on with you guys.
And we always appreciate you making time for us as well.
Did we ever send Amanda an Illegal Curve sandwich to Montreal?
We didn't. We're not sure how they'll travel.
No, but in fairness, I didn't send you any smoked meat either.
That's right. The quid pro quo hasn't been met by...
We're still waiting for that.
It hasn't been met on either side, so that's something that's something we can work on over the next few months, Amanda.
Perfect. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
You know, so, you know, you were speaking throughout the day on a number of different Montreal radio stations and on your own station, TSN 690, about your battle with generalized anxiety disorder. And I saw that, you know, via Twitter and everything else. And you were kind enough to join us here in Winnipeg as well. So for those who don't know, and I include myself in that group, can you tell us what generalized anxiety disorder is?
Yeah, so essentially it's a type of anxiety disorder that's actually very common. And essentially the way it manifests itself in me is that to be anxious, to have an anxiety attack or a panic attack, I don't require an actual trigger. Nothing actually has to happen. It's more of a biological reaction. It's an imbalance in my body with my biological makeup that just triggers anxiety. So essentially the best way for me to describe it is I could be having a great day, you know, sitting down to brunch with some friends, and all of a sudden my biological reaction will be that I start feeling like I have anxiety about something. And then your brain kind of goes as if there's like a hamster running on one of those hamster wheels where, okay, so why am I anxious? And that hamster's running slow, and then you're like, well, I'm not really sure. And he starts speeding up, and that's all going on in your brain. And it goes on and on in this really vicious cycle of like, well, if I'm not anxious, why do I feel this way? It must be because I'm anxious about something. What could that thing possibly be? And it sort of spirals out of control in that way. And for me, it was a daily battle. You know, it was exhausting. It takes a lot of energy out of you, even when you wake up in the morning, to know that it's a possibility.
You know, Amanda, I feel for you. And when I saw that you were tweeting about it, I mean, it's very well known, especially to the guys at the station, that I've had depression and it's run in my family. I've had some tragedies in my family. So I think you deserve, you know, a lot of credit, you know, for speaking about this, because there's a lot of people I imagine that you've talked to, you know, that have thanked you for talking about this. For you personally, you know, how does it help you, you know, to whether it's on Twitter or on the radio, to, you know, talk about some of your own struggles?
It's been a really interesting experience. I'm really fortunate in that I've actually been in psychotherapy for the last 5 years or so. So it's something, you know, talking about it is something I'm used to doing, but talking about it publicly is certainly very different. And last year was really, so about a year ago was when I was diagnosed, and I was also diagnosed with depression as well. Excuse me. And, I wanted to talk about it a year ago, and when it came up to that day, I couldn't. Like, I just didn't have the courage to do it. And then about 9 months ago, when my depression was really bad, when my anxiety was just, like, took hold of my life, and I made the decision with my therapist to go on medication, that changed my life. It changed everything for me, and it gave me a confidence. What it did is it actually maybe who I've always been, but just now my biology is properly balanced. And so to feel this way and to be on this side of it, to answer your question, you know, it feels really good to be able to share my story and to have people reach out and say, oh, well, I never knew that you went through that, which is, you know, you can't blame anyone because you become such a good liar about who you are and the things you're going through when you're trying to hide things. It's really encouraging to see the type of support that especially Bell Let's Talk, this initiative, has brought forward. It is helping end the stigma. And I think when people like myself who, you know, although I don't like to say it, but, you know, a public figure to some degree, it helps other people feel comfortable with what they're going through. And the outreach today, just whether it be them hearing me, you know, people hearing me on the station or retweeting me or, you know, sharing their stories on Twitter, has been really encouraging. And people just, you know, you just don't want people to feel alone, because I think, you know, you and I both know how lonely it can be.
Amanda, here in Winnipeg, the Winnipeg Jets created an initiative called Project 11. It's in support of Rick Rippon, a former Manitoba Moose. Yep. Winnipeg Jet took his own life. I'm sure you know the story. it focuses on educating children in between the grades of 5 to 8 on, you know, awareness and just essentially highlighting the fact that they don't have to suffer alone and that they should talk and that they should express what they're feeling. How important is it to share that message with kids in such an important developmental age, you know, between grade 5 and 8, when, you know, you're really becoming your own kind of person and kind of establishing your own independence? I mean, like, how important of a time frame is that to grab these kids?
I think it's huge, and I think that that's going to help tremendously with our future generations. You know, I'm 30 years old, and I really only got a grasp on what was going on in my life in the last 2-3 years in terms of my mental health and how I was going to approach it and what I was going to do to change my life. But, you know, I didn't realize until about maybe 5-6 years ago that my human nature, my presence in this world was different than a lot of people. And I mean that in that my feelings that I was having about things were not normal. I just thought it was the human condition. I just thought it was the way everybody lived their life. And for some reason, I just, you know, wasn't able to handle what everyone else felt about things. When in fact, I didn't know because I didn't have that same type of education that some kids are getting now today about their feelings, about their reactions, about, you know, their innermost thoughts. So I really strongly believe in educating the youth in that department because I could have saved myself so many years of struggling and hiding and, you know, not even telling my family at one point that I was having such a difficult time. I could have saved myself a lot of sleepless nights had at a young age I had also been given this opportunity to learn more about the human condition, the human experience, and, you know, how we are supposed to gauge our feelings as children.
Amanda Stein is our guest on NHL This Week. She joins us as part of Bell Let's Talk Day. Amanda's with our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690, talking about her battle with depression and generalized anxiety disorder. Amanda, in our role, you know, here, you know, on radio, or same thing with Montreal, you are, as you mentioned, you know, a bit of a public figure, quote unquote, and, you know, I guess supposedly we are too, you know, sort of, kind of, but, you know, we
it's weird,
you know, try,
right?
And
it's like a weird thing to say about.
I know it's sort of awkward to say it out loud, but, you know, how did your battle with depression and how were you, you know, how did that affect your job there at TSN 690? Because, you know, you're in the spotlight. You have to ask questions of athletes and coaches. It's often high tension situations.
Yeah.
How did your battle, you know, affect your job?
So it really affected my job. It was so difficult, and I'm so fortunate to work for a company like we do and the people that I do in Montreal, where maybe when I wasn't on the best of my game, though they didn't really know why, they stuck with me because I think everyone's, you know, reaping the benefits of it. Essentially, you know, I go back to this story where Saku Koivu had come back to Montreal for the first time since deciding to sign in Anaheim. And I was so nervous about just asking one question. So, you know, and it could have been the most basic of questions. And any time I had to ask an athlete a question, this was kind of the process I would go through. I was at home and I knew what I wanted to ask him. And I wrote the question down about 30 times on a piece of paper because for me, that repetitive nature, I was convinced that it would stay in my head that way, that my anxiety wouldn't grab hold in that moment where I was called upon for a question and I wouldn't forget or I wouldn't be nervous. It's not that I'd forget my question, but I'd be so anxious about it that I wouldn't be able to get it out. I wrote that question down so many times. And when it came to that actual day, I remember sitting in the front row and listening to people ask their questions and just be so nervous about wanting to ask my question. And there was something in me that, you know, I forced myself to put my hand up to ask a question. And I sort of felt when it was my turn, like my hands went numb. I felt this like flush over my body and I kind of blacked out at the whole experience, but I know I did get my question out. And to me, I considered that a very small victory in my life and kind of hung on to that in terms of work. But you know, there have been times where my anxiety is so bad, I'd be so nervous about what other people would think of my question, what the athlete or coach would think of my question, or would they think my question is stupid, or what if it requires a follow-up question and I don't know what that is. That type of stuff for me was really, really paralyzing. And, you know, I'm sort of ashamed to admit it, but I have to, because I have to be honest, is that I would sometimes go weeks on end without actually asking a question, because I was so stuck in my anxiety that it would not allow me out of it and then, or to ask a question. And then it would be this vicious cycle where I'd be upset at myself for not asking the question and not, and letting the anxiety take hold of me. It's a really, really awful cycle. But now that I've been on medication for 9 months and I feel really great, the best I've felt in my entire life, I see myself better at my job. It has made me so much better at my job, so much more open, willing to challenge an athlete, willing to challenge a coach if need be. And I truly believe that I am now the person and the reporter that I always have been and always was supposed to be, but just needed a little bit of help.
You know, Amanda, it's amazing listening to you talk about this, because I'm a journalism person as well, and many of the things that you're describing are exactly, literally, word for word, what I was experiencing. And, you know, I went on medication about 7 years ago, and, yeah, you know, I think I'm doing pretty well. So I just want to say, you know, it's awesome that you're, you know, talking about that, and, you know, sunnier days ahead, absolutely.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, we don't know what people are going through. You know, I was really scared, to be honest, that someone would catch on that I'm not really asking questions, because that's, like, you know, the biggest faux pas in the business is to sort of walk around and not steal other people's questions, but just be in the scrum and not contribute in any sort of way. And I was really terrified that this was going to end up being my demise in the business. And how, you know, how awful would that have been, right, if I didn't get the appropriate help and finally be able to be the reporter I've always wanted to be and could be. It feels really good. And it's nice to know that other people in this business too, like yourself, have had, you know, similar struggles to whatever degree it is, because nobody does really talk about it. We're getting better at it, but it is also a job where you're putting yourself in a position to be criticized and all that. And that's okay. But if you don't have that internal strength, if you're already a little bit weak inside, and I know it's sick, not weak, but there is, you know, for me, I felt a bit of weakness to accept criticism and all that. I'm so glad that I'm at a spot where I can challenge that in myself.
Amanda, we'll let you go on this last question. We greatly appreciate you sharing your struggle and your story and your journey with us. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask about your family. You know, how have they been a support for you throughout this battle? How have they been an asset for you in you know, conquering and dealing with the generalized anxiety disorder and the depression?
My family, I have a very big family. I'm one of five kids. I've got a mom, a stepdad, a stepmom, and a father. So I've got a huge support system around me. My two sisters are probably the people in the world I'm closest to, them and my father. The one thing about me in my family is that I've never been afraid to tell people in my family what I had been struggling with, you know, whether it was like struggling at school or whatnot. I've always felt the need to share, probably because I don't think I could survive if I bottled things up. And so they've been through this course with me. They've been through this journey with me from the very beginning. And without them, I don't know where I'd be. I'd be scared to know where I would be. But they've been my biggest cheerleaders. And, you know, when things weren't going well at work, or when things, you know, I'd live by myself, and, you know, if I was having a panic attack, I'd call my father right away, and he'd come over and either take me back to his house or just hang out here with me. To have my family has been absolutely incredible, and I'm really one of the lucky people, because not everybody feels that comfortable talking to their family the way I am. But I suggest to you, if anyone out there is struggling, at the end of the day, you know, your family is your family, and they will have your back. And to me, that's been the most important thing for me is that no matter who may judge me for what I've gone through, I've always got them, and they've always got me. And that's all that really matters in the end.
But Amanda, you're going to have to explain to us why the Stein family didn't finish your dad's birthday cake a couple days ago.
Okay. Well, the Stein family, so we had this big birthday cake for my dad's birthday, and my sister made it. It was a four-tier chocolate cake. It was absolutely delicious. But the thing is the Stein family is far too health conscious to actually eat an entire cake. So everyone sort of has their little sliver and then sort of takes the rest home. We're, you know, a family of six on that side of my family, so everyone sort of takes a bit home. But the cake is so big, I offered to take a giant piece home, and I brought it to the press box yesterday before the Habs game. And I tell you, I've never been more popular in the press box in my life, and it was gone in about 3 seconds. And everyone asked me that same question. Why is this cake still here? Why did you guys not eat it? It's because we're way too health conscious, and it's terrible, and it's shameful, and it's a big dark secret that I have now let out.
Free chocolate cake in a press box really doesn't have a chance of lasting long.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible.
Amanda Stein is with our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. She's a frequent guest of this program. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us to talk about your journey. Thank you for your strength. Thank you for your courage. And really, you know, as part of Bell Let's Talk Day, just thank you for opening up for everybody here in Winnipeg and back home in Montreal.
Well, I really appreciate you reaching out to me and having me on. I love being on with you guys. I love being on in Winnipeg. So to everybody out there in Winnipeg, you know, have a beautiful night and stay healthy and stay happy, and reach out if there's anything. You can follow me on Twitter at Amanda C. Stein. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone may have, because as much as this is Bell Let's Talk, it's also about listening.
Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal. Thanks, Amanda.
Bye, guys.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one quick final segment. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tickets available for this weekend. Mark Normand in town, Darren Rose of the Match Game coming up next week, and of course at the beginning of March, Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live, or on Saturday Night Live alum at least, is going to be in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Get them now, they will go quickly.
Yeah, shout out to Ben Walker.
Yeah, Ben Walker performing tonight at Rumors as well. If you got a couple minutes, there's still 5 minutes before showtime there, so you can head down to Rumors and go check out Ben tonight at Rumors.
You know what I forgot to tell you, Drew? I met Kelly Taylor.
Yeah.
Tyler was there at the game on Saturday.
Yeah.
So I already know Tyler, but I met Kelly Taylor, super nice guy, and all those shows were sold out.
Yeah, Kelly Taylor, a good Sasky boy. I believe, in fact, Mr. Munns, Mr. Bayak made a visit down there this past weekend to see Kelly Taylor, if I'm not mistaken. So, he had some great, the St. Louis Blues, a number of the St. Louis Blues were in attendance on Friday night. So, Rumors Comedy Club, that's the place to be, obviously. It's where all the Winnipeg celebrities are hanging out.
Ben Walker, the old ball coach.
The old ball coach, Ben Walker, exactly right. Want to say thank you again to Amanda Stein for joining us as part of Bell Let's Talk Day. In case you missed any of that interview, it is available on tsn1290.ca. We'll also have it on our website, illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the show, just subscribe to it on iTunes, and you can get it sent to you each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, just mentioned them, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big props to producer Alex, doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.